Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for April 22nd, 2010. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hey, Elise.
Tribune managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Reeve Hamilton is sitting in for Ben Philpott today.
Hello.
Today, our topics are the latest poll in the 2010 governor's race, our exclusive interview with Governor Rick Perry, and healthcare grandstanding this week on both sides. And finally, the road funding hole, which sounded inappropriate. Didn't mean it to.
It does now.
No, if nobody was thinking it before, they are now.
Reeve, why don't you start us off with the latest numbers and what you make of them?
Okay, well, Rasmussen came out with their latest governor poll numbers earlier this week. It doesn't seem like a big change from the last poll. The last poll was 49-43 Perry over White. Now it's 48-44. White supporters seem to be particularly happy because it looks like he's within striking distance. But the margin of error in the poll is pretty high. I think it was 4.5%, which he could very well be out of striking distance.
Well, but that also makes it a toss-up.
Right.
I mean, but it's early. I mean, we can acknowledge, right, Ross? Brief, it's early.
It is very early.
It's foolish to get too excited about numbers, you know, this many months out from the race.
It's a classic devil you know, devil you don't. I mean, you know, Perry's sort of a known quantity. Everybody, you sort of go to everybody and you say you have a governor, you know, here he is, and we have an alternative. And they say, well, let me see that. And that's just sort of a natural reaction. As they know more about Bill White, and the question here is going to be whether Bill White tells them that or Rick Perry tells them that, but as they know more about Bill White, the numbers will get real.
I think we should look at each number separately. You know, I am at least, as I think about these poll numbers, the 48 number is interesting, right? Because until the primary that we just went through in March, Perry had not been at 50% in a poll since the 2006 uncontested GOP primary for governor. Right? He had not hit 50, so he beats Kay Bailey Hutchison handily, by which we mean he got all of 51%. Right? He didn't do much better than 51. Maybe he got to 52, but it was a pretty small, a bit over 50. He's not at 50 in this poll. Now, it's 10 years. The man's been in office for 10 years. What do you still need to decide? You either want to vote for him or you don't. So he's at 48%. Is this a cause for concern? The conventional wisdom purveyors would say any incumbent not at 50 is in trouble, but I'm not sure that it actually means that.
Well, and factor in the fact that a lot of people who say they're undecided in polls aren't actually undecided, but don't feel comfortable kind of telling the person on the other end of the line or on the other end of the web.
Maybe they should call it non-responsive.
Right, right. And some polls actually have a separation, right, for did not respond versus saying they're undecided. But a lot of times, you know, people just choose to be undecided until they actually go into the polling place.
Yeah, this week's weird analogy. I mean, you walk into a restaurant, you always get the same thing in that restaurant. You walk in and you always read the menu. You look at it and you say, oh, I might get something different. And you get the same thing, or are you going to get something different? They go in and they've got Rick Perry. They voted for Rick Perry for 10 years now. They walk in and they say, well, you know, there's a Bill White on the menu. It's like, oh, I'll look at it. But we're not to decision point yet. I mean, you know, they'll start really announcing their decisions. Maybe they are, like, at least they've already decided. But, you know, they're not going to really make their choices known to pollsters and to others till October.
What did Deirdre DeLisi say this morning, Reeve, that if you just broke down the undecided vote, which I think is 6%.
Right, 6%. Right. And there are 2% of Texans say that they're definitely not voting for either of them.
And they want somebody else. Who else is available? I guess the Libertarian. Maybe we should put our sound guy, Todd Weisman, up. Governor Weisman, I will resign from the Tribune to run that campaign.
The Libertarian in this race, you can just say, the Libertarian in this race is going to get 3%.
Does Libertarian always get 3%?
They're going to get 3%.
Are they going to get a larger share this year because there's such a Libertarian streak? Excuse me. I just banged the table on accident. Are they going to get a larger share in this year's general election because there's such a strong kind of anti-government streak?
It doesn't look like it from this, does it?
I mean, I don't see that. I mean, you know, and I think, you know, one of the things we've talked about before is Perry has done a pretty good job of keeping the conservative strays in his corral. I mean, they've kind of stuck with him. He was the first guy who said secession. He was the first guy who said nullification.
26 years plus in office, 10 years plus as governor, longest serving governor in history. He's an outsider.
Right.
He's an insurgent. You want to talk about a trick. He has managed to give people the, and I give him a lot of credit. I don't mean it in a negative way. I give him credit. He's managed to persuade people that he's an outsider. So the Libertarians you're referring to are the ones who are angry at the insiders, angry at the establishment.
Right.
He's actually courting those people by saying, I'm one of you. it's a remarkable.
Let's all get together and be angry at Washington.
Right. Right. Now, the thing about DePaul, I mean, you say that DePaul is not that different from the previous poll. I mean, I actually would say, my friend, that 49-43 and 48-44 is actually more significant in the sense that he has a point less, White's got a point more. Mm-hmm. White is at the highest point in this poll he has been. The white people have, I think, genuine reason to celebrate because they don't have a lot of other reasons to celebrate. There hasn't been a huge amount of good news for the white campaign thus far. They're trying to get the two sticks to ignite, but it's been difficult. But they can now say to potential donors, look, we are within the sight line of this guy.
It worked great for Kay.
but you know what? The funny thing is, though, I mean, again, I will note that we discovered this in the day before the primary, better late than never,
right,
that despite our assertion that this was a competitive race between Rick and Kay, it never actually was based on the polls. She was ahead in a total of one poll. And in all but two of the polls in which he was ahead going back to last summer, he was ahead by double digits. I don't know that Kay was ever in any of those polls that we're talking about. 4 points is a pretty slim margin compared to the polls
there was
that
a
were
skinny poll
routinely
September.
Coming out between Perry and Hutchinson.
There was a skinny Rasmussen poll in September, right. But your point's taken. I mean, but she did well in early polls. The thing
True.
Here is that she did well in early polls, and I'll go back to
pre-beating the crap out of her.
When they right. have a description in their heads of Bill White, whether it's provided by him or by his opponents,
right.
then we'll get a real number.
Can we say something about that? You Reeve, know the white people. Right? Well, you do. You have Katie Bacon
white,
on speed
you
dial.
You mean the white campaign people.
You do. Yeah, I didn't mean this isn't a racial comment, actually. Right. Yes. That's your bureau. You're
the, great. I've spoken to your people.
Yeah. So Mark Miner, who is the Perry spokesperson, puts out releases every day on some subject or another. And he's gotten into the habit, I want to acknowledge. I mean, it's kind of classic Donald Segretti kind of gut.
It's schoolyard.
Stab
it's
politics.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so let's say that today Bill White had an omelet. So the release that the Miner would put out on behalf of Perry campaign is, on day 66 of liberal trial lawyer Bill White not releasing his tax returns, comma, he had an omelet. Right. That's now the beginning of every release. I have to say, it has penetrated my consciousness. Whether it's fair or not, they've kind of got a storyline that they're pushing super hard. I would like to know what the White campaign is doing to rebut that. I mean, I'm not asking this in a negative way to the White campaign, but this gets to your point, which is an early poll is an early poll. Perceptions of the candidates are formed over time.
Right.
Often they're formed by the other candidate forming the perception of you for you if you don't do it for yourself. And we said very early on that the White campaign needs to watch the game films of the Hutchinson campaign and learn that what happened there was the Perry campaign defined Hutchinson before Hutchinson defined herself.
Interesting.
The Perry campaign is doing its work on White.
An interesting case study. So the runoffs in I think it's CD 17. It's Chet Edwards' district. There was a Republican runoff there. Bill Flores beats Chet Edwards.
He beats Kurnock.
I'm sorry. Beats Kurnock in order to face Chet Edwards.
Matt McCovey is about to send you some TIFF's treats. So
probably
can
flowers in the mail
clip
now.
Clip that FTD.
I'm staying out of any Matt McCovey conversation.
Yes.
So on
Thank
the,
you, Boo.
On the evening of the runoff, the Chet Edwards campaign sends over a thing. Congratulations to Bill Flores. I look forward to a campaign that's, you know, all sweetness and light, blah, 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 blah. 6 hours later, after we'd all gone to bed and to set the stage for the next morning, he began framing Bill Flores.
And he hasn't stopped.
This is an experienced guy who's played defense before. Chet Edwards is, you know, one of the, you know, sort of the famous Republican targets. He immediately started defining the race, started defending himself, started jumping out in front of it. Bill White beats Farrukh Shami in the primary, and Rick Perry starts doing this to him. Bill White hasn't answered.
In fact, he did it the weekend before he even won the primary.
Just go to Waco and take a class from Chet Edwards. I mean, you know, it's an interesting thing. You know, Edwards and Perry are basically doing the same thing. This is my race. I'm going to frame it. I'm going to define my opponent. I'm going to define the race. This is what it's about.
Maybe it's an Aggie thing.
Maybe they all, you know, maybe
it's an Aggie thing versus a UT law thing, you know.
White has chosen different issues to attack Perry on than Hutchison did, where she focused on toll roads. They've been really focusing on education, which didn't come up so much in the Hutchinson campaign.
Right, and you would think that as education affects everybody, whether you have kids in school or not, this would be something that would get some traction, but, you know, it remains to be seen. I just think the White campaign does have an agenda ahead of it, say. They've got to get out in front of the definition of White, and they can't cede it entirely to Mark Miner.
Right.
Or Dave Carney.
And everything they do, the Miner just picks up and throws back at them. Like, they had a Bill White University to train supporters, and that just became a meme in the minor press releases.
Right.
You know,
right.
We went through freshman year all the way to whatever year he's on now.
In semester one of Bill White University being in session, you know.
You got one guy, it's one of those things, you know, you sort of saw this in the schoolyard, right? You know, you get this kid who's working real hard and really serious and everything, and everybody's just sort of, you know, giving him a wedgie every day. And
an atomic wedgie.
An atomic wedgie, that's right.
Let's stay on the topic of Perry, though, because Evan got to spend some one-on-one time with
right.
him last week.
Right, and neither of us gave the other a wedgie. Let's just get that out there.
What a
right
relief.
Now. I did see the governor last Thursday.
I don't know where to go with that.
No, the answer is no place. I did see the governor last Thursday. Ben Philpott and I trooped up to the Capitol, past Leo Berman screaming on the steps of the Capitol about thus and such, and made it up to the governor's office, where we sat with the governor for about 35 to 40 minutes and interviewed him as part of the Newsweek Texas Tribune collaboration that resulted in the Newsweek cover this week, which has a shorter version of the interview than the Tribune ran on Monday. And then we also ran the unedited audio. And, you know, I found the governor to be actually quite good in conversation on these topics. Didn't necessarily, you know, get a whole lot of time on any one topic, because the purpose of this interview was to sort of fly 1,000 feet above the ground and try to see everything. So we talked about Mexico. We talked about the state budget. I thought it was interesting on the state budget. It hasn't gotten a lot of attention. But the governor said on the question of the state budget and the shortfall, we intend to do in 2011 what we did in 2003, which is to balance the budget through cuts. Now, people have come back and said, well, he said that to you, but that's not exactly right.
Right.
He didn't exactly balance the budget through cuts.
Right. They did balance the budget mostly without tax increases, which is sort of, you know, the flip of that. There's a bunch of stuff you can do. You know, the famous one is you can, you know, it's like the kind of financing that you did in college with your checkbook. They take the payments that are due on the last day of the budget period and delay them 24 hours into the next budget period. It saves about $1.8 billion. It's just this, you know, it's like kiting checks when you're in college. I mean, they just float this check into the next
sleight of hand.
Worry
right?
about it later.
That's
so there was a lot of stuff like that. They did do some cuts.
Yeah.
They used the rainy day fund a little bit.
They used the rainy day
they
fund
had some
a little
federal
bit.
Help.
And he seemed actually
deregulated
cool.
tuition.
True. He seemed cool to the idea of using the rainy day fund for these purposes, which I thought was interesting.
It's a difficult, you know, it's sort of a funny thing. I mean, if you're going to somebody and you're saying, we're cutting these programs that you love, but we have money in the savings account, you know, people go, why do you
cut
the program?
If it's not raining now, when will it rain?
How would you describe rain exactly?
So he talked about the budget. We talked about Mexico. He said basically the federal government's got an obligation to do it can to solve the border security problem, that we shouldn't have to do anything. We talked about redistricting. He called Jerry Patterson and Jim Baker naive for suggesting that you can depoliticize the process of redistricting, which I think was interesting. He talked about the Tea Party. He talked about a range of topics. But the thing he really got the most attention was, he said, I'm not running for president, and I'm not running for vice president, which, of course, I translated into I'm not going to be on the cover of Newsweek, but it turned out no. In fact, they still wanted him on the cover of Newsweek, but he was pretty conclusive about it. And of course, somebody said to me this morning at our Trib Live event, well, that's what he says now,
right?
And he's not going to say I am going to run for president in advance of a governor's race in which that can be turned against him. And he could always come back around later and say, well, I changed my mind, or conditions have changed, whatever else. But he seemed pretty conclusive about it for now.
Well, you talked to the authors of Game Change recently. This was a big thing in that book about Obama did the same thing, where he very conclusively said, I'm not running for president. And then he did, and he won.
Yes, I'll also note that when I raised the possibility of a Perry campaign for governor with the authors of Game Change, they went, not so much. they thought, he's not going to be a great candidate if he runs.
Was there something in particular that you could tell Perry had where he really had his attention? I mean, was there some subject that he really rose to and sort of you could tell, this is where his head is? Or?
Well, I thought the whole state versus the federal government thing, which has been a Perry theme for at least a year, he was pretty engaged and energized in talking about the 10th Amendment and, you know, the fact that he said the federal government was created as an agent for the states, not the reverse. He talked a lot about that stuff. The one thing where I think we might have gotten him a little ruffled or rustled there was the George Bush stuff. It's a topic that...
What is it called? The fourth rail? The third rail?
Whichever rail it is.
The fourth rail would be very surprising.
If there even were a fourth rail. That's like something out of a
Tron,
isn't it? He doesn't seem too happy having to talk about George Bush. And I don't feel like you know, he said, oh, he's an incredibly good president. You know, he said very, very good, and then he said incredibly good. Oh. If we had talked around, if we talked longer, he might have said amazingly good. but he did not actually get to great, and I think that people who look for tension between Bush and Perry and people who wish for there to be some drama probably have some grounds for optimism.
Also, his reason for saying that he was very, very good was just he kept America safe, which seems like a...
Except for 9/11.
Not much of a reason.
Elise makes an interesting point, which I'm glad she made and I didn't, so that the audio of her saying that is out there and not of me saying it. But there are people who will argue with even that... There are people who will argue with that question. Did he keep America safe? Well, if you don't count nine, it's like Rudy Giuliani saying, you know, several weeks back, you know, there was no terrorist attack on American shores under the Bush administration.
Except for the one.
Except for that one, right?
Yeah, right.
Look, I don't think that Perry was sincere, I think, in saying what he said, and I think I just don't think he was prepared to say that Bush was a great president, which we all kind of go, ooh, you know. And does anybody really care beyond us? Probably not.
Right.
The news was really the presidency thing, and right. You know.
And you're not. You don't seem convinced that he's not going to be.
I just, you know, I'll believe it when, you know, on the day after Election Day 2013. That's when I'll believe, or 2012. That's the day I'm going to believe that he's not. I mean, he has the opportunity to walk up to the line until there's not a line anymore.
Right.
So he's discounting the possibility now, and he may or may not discount the possibility later.
Well, let's stay on this state versus federal government theme that Perry has played so well. David Dewhurst is trying to get in on it. Greg Abbott's trying to get in on it. Former New York Governor Pataki was in town this week. Basically, he started this new organization, a big petition drive to get people to sign a petition saying they want to repeal health care reform.
Michael Williams is here.
Michael Williams spoke. Florence Shapiro got up there in front of the cameras. About eight other state lawmakers got in there just to kind of stand there in front of the cameras.
Sure.
So it's like very hip right now.
Who knew George Pataki was such a magnet?
Right.
Right?
And he went, I should say here, he went immediately from the Austin appearance to Iowa.
And he's running commercials on television.
Right. Certainly a coincidence.
Right. And we asked him whether he was running for president. He said, oh no, you know, there's so many people
him?
Who are
like,
better
like
than
him
me.
Some sweet corn.
You know?
That's all it is, yeah.
But, you know, just cynically, I just find it interesting that there's just so much grandstanding against healthcare at this time when, for example, Ross and I were talking about in 2003, you know, when Medicare Part D was kind of passed with this unruly process, one of the memories of bad and ugly sausage making in Congress. You know, the same people were not railing against Medicare Part D, which has ended up costing a lot of money as well. So, you know, on the flip side, there was another press conference supporting health care reform. So people for it and against it are all out there. I'm just kind of, I guess, over it, you know, over the political posturing.
Well, you had that video of... afterwards, you talked to Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst, and he said that with health care, we might have to have dramatic tax increases because of the strains we'll put on the budget. I just wonder if this might provide the political cover for Republicans to raise taxes to deal with the state budget.
Yeah,
like we were
just talking about. He didn't mean let's have them.
No.
It was mostly like, boo, right. It's a scare tactic. You
but
know?
if they are unable to repeal health care reform, could they use that to then be like, oh, well, now we'll raise taxes?
Pin the tax on the donkey. This is one of those things where you say, you know, we have this budget problem in Texas. The federal government has imposed all of these.
They made us do it.
The federal government. Well, A, I mean, these are separate things. We have this budget hole in Texas. We have this shortfall that's somewhere between $11 and $19 billion, you know, pull a number. And the federal government has just passed this health thing that's going to cost the state a lot of money. And if anything bad happens, who are you going to put the blame on? They just pin the tax on the donkey. I mean, they just, you know, it's a Washington thing. Whether that has anything to do with the shortfall or not, we go into the next session. We've got a bunch of problems that fiscal problems that the state had before the federal government ever touched health care reform. But if you've got that as a straw man, you've got, you know, some way to blame somebody else for the problem.
I think the Pataki visit is interesting for another reason. So let's assume Perry is taken at his word. He's not running for president. We're going to have all these Republican candidates over the next 2 years. And thank God for it, because it's going to be a great spectator sport. Trooping through here, flirting, and giggling before audiences, and we're going to get to see how they play. Sarah Palin's going to be here on the 29th, is that right?
Doing sort of a secret Texas tour.
Well, it's not that secret. I know about it.
I heard it on a podcast at the Tribune, right?
Right. It's a pro-life deal she's doing, I think, right, or an anti-choice deal, however you come at the issue. Gingrich was here on Tax Day. Pataki was here. Romney is coming through Texas on his book tour, though not to Austin.
Right.
Or at least as of now. We're trying to get him to come to Austin to do the Trip Live series. I just expect that we're going to have, it's going to be the parade of wannabes.
Well, you know, they all came through to see George Bush when George Bush was running, and they all ended up sort of saying, well, you know, and signing off on his candidacy for president. And I think part of the reason they're coming here is, you know, it's the oldest line in politics, but it's also true. Texas is an ATM, and there's a lot of money down here for national politics for both parties.
But
you're also coming down to say, you're really not running, are you, Rick? You're really not? You're really
right. Well, you made that point that one of the differences between Bush and Perry, as they've set themselves up in advance of the presidential, is that everybody came down here to bestow their blessings on Bush.
Right.
They're now coming here to get Perry to bestow his blessings on them. Perry is putting himself out there potentially as a kingmaker,
right,
who can deliver his followers, his fans, the electoral votes of Texas, what have you.
The excitement of that part of the Republican Party, right?
Right. And so whether it's Sarah Palin, who famously endorsed Perry the last time, or if it's Newt Gingrich or, you know, Tim Pawlenty, fellow governor, or whomever, they're all coming to seek Perry's support. Right. That's interesting.
Right.
Ross, with our final few minutes, there's a more specific transportation
That means we're almost out of time.
Yeah, right.
There's a more specific transportation funding hole that Deirdre DeLisi talked about in Trib Live this week.
She basically, Evan asked her, how big a difference is there between what we have and what we need? And she said it's about $315 billion between now and 2030. And she had this really interesting phrase, to maintain the current level of congestion. So if you only want the roads to suck as bad as they suck right now, it'll cost $315 billion. That's a heck of a gun to hold to your head, isn't it?
We don't even have that.
Well, and then the other thing she said was, you know, so I don't expect the legislature to come up with that much money because, you know, that's a pile of money. And if they did come up with that much money, we don't have the capacity to build all of the roads it would take. So, you know, traffic alert, it's not going to be pleasant out there on big highways and stuff. She seemed to spend, they sort of have a couple of problems. I mean, you know, the cities have gotten clogged internally, and the routes between the cities are insufficient to move traffic. You know, I-35 is a classic example. To move traffic around, I guess parts of I-10 are a classic example of this. But it was just interesting to hear the size of the hole. You know, TxDOT is trying to get into this position where everybody kind of understands this as a math problem and not as a political problem, which is, I think, is kind of interesting. She said she wanted the agency to be more transparent, that she wanted people to know which part of their road was getting built, which part wasn't getting built, and why. And I think that they're, you know, in an ideal world, they'll get to a place where people look at it and then they'll say, well, we can't have more roads until we put more money into the machine. We don't have any more money in the machine, but at least we understand what the problem is, instead of a fight over Trans-Texas corridors, eminent domain, and all these other things.
But, you know, education of people, which is what she talked about. How are you going to get the money? She said, well, we're going to educate people.
Right.
Well, what does that mean? Educating people and transparency, for that matter, are interesting, but they're not going to fix potholes. They're not going to. That's not going to solve the problem. Well, money is going to solve the problem.
They very famously educated the public about toll roads with that big promotional campaign that they ended up getting sued for because they were trying to sway public opinion in favor of toll roads. So, you know, when I hear education, I'm thinking, you know, promotion of more private public partnerships, likely, because she was also against a gas tax solution, saying that that's not sustainable over the long haul.
Yeah, I guess she was against it. She seemed to sort of be willing to entertain it, but she was definitely down on it.
She sort of said, you know, you could have a gas tax, but A, it wouldn't raise enough money. And, you know, and it was kind of interesting. One other thing that she said that I think was sort of a sub rosa thing was that she said, you know, if you can build these toll roads and there will always be a choice between riding on the toll road and there will always be a free road. So now we've got this elite that rides on the fast road and pays for it, and everybody else rides on the free road. It just sort of sounded like, you know,
I think of that as the Words with Friends Lite app on the iPhone, where I have to live with ads, or I can pay and have the ad-free version.
Right, you can ride for free. It'll take you an hour to get to work, or you can pay $2 and get to work in a half hour. Think your boss is going to say, why didn't you spend the $2?"
Well, your boss might.
Yeah,
I might say that.
I could hear that.
I was going to say I feel very educated about the road situation on my drive to work every morning, but.
Right, so practical experience.
I use the light version of the Words with Friends app.
You're willing to have the ads. May I say also, I think it's always interesting to hear a good Republican like Deirdre DeLisi advocate against giving power to local entities. I just think it's so interesting. You would think that local control would be exactly in league with the philosophy of the Republican Party.
So just
we don't like mandates.
Do you want to do a footnote on this real quick?
Well, what she said was that she won't.
Over to you, Ross.
Looking at each other for the asterisk. You know, what she said was that she's in charge of a statewide system, and that, you know, to maintain a statewide system, you have to have statewide blah, blah, blah.
Which means we don't want mandates from the federal government.
Right, because they want an interstate system as opposed to a state system.
We don't want their mandates. Our mandates are good.
Just so.
Did I not understand what she said? I mean, that seemed to me what she was saying.
It's always this way. I wouldn't just hang this on the Republicans, but it's perfectly, it's their government right now, so you can. But we do this in
schools
too.
And they're also the anti-mandate party.
We say we don't want race to the top money because it's a federal mandate on education, and we tell our 1,100 school districts what their standards should be.
Yeah.
Right.
We'll have to solve the mandate problem another time, Elise.
I've got to bring this podcast into park.
Land this plane or something. Right.
If you have any comments or questions for the Tribcast, you can email us at podcasts@texastribune.org. On behalf of Evan, Ross, and Reeve, I'm Elise. Thank you for listening.